So we're basically after vitality within the culture, like what builds that attribute of vitality in the body. And one of the things that all cultures definitely have in common is something we just simply call regalia, right? And in modern times, regalia is still flying around. And regalia shows up in lots of different ways, but it's basically a way for you to wear on yourself or display somewhere that people, you know, basically align with you, things that talk about you and your identity, right? In modern times, regalia, is very interesting the way it's expressing. There's a lot of different uses of it today, and they're all, you know, equally valid, and they still have the same impact, because you can walk into a space and look around at people and really quickly know by the way they're dressed that you've just walked into a permaculture site. It's really obviously, and you know, it's funny too, because they would never want to be identified as people who like have like a badge on their body that says who they are, because they're rebellious characters, aren't they? Permaculturists, myself being one. Same thing happens with trackers. You know, you go out to an experience and you're with trackers, and you know, they're all being rugged individuals and they're all rebellious and doing their thing with dispassion, but they all are regaliaed, you know. And it sometimes shows up in the form of that they've got that thing right on their hip that they can measure with, right? And for some reason, they all wear baseball caps. I haven't figured that one out yet. But they're not usually baseball teams, except if you bump into people from San Francisco, they all seem to want to wear the Giants no matter who they are. But when you're out with the trackers, they always have some kind of important conservation project on their hat that they're wearing. You know, it's like a badge. I helped this bear project. And so they got something that identifies that. And they want you to ask them about their hat. You know, they're just waiting. Because if you ask somebody about the regalia, then they got to tell you a story, you know, and that sort of inspires something, and it gets this energy moving. And you'll notice that when people get to talk about their regalia, if they're not being shy or in that moment rude, and they drop into that storytelling place, they actually get, you see the electricity in their body. You see them using their hands in a certain way. Because if they're passionate about something, that they're going to wear it. When they talk about it, the electricity rises in the body. And I think this is the link, you know, to regalia. When I'm in the Kalahari with the Bushmen, they're all very uniform in their clothing. The women wear certain, they tend to get their leather from the steenbok, which is a small antelope. And I believe probably one of the reasons they do it that was explained to me was because the steenbok is already soft and it's easy to tan. So they tend to wear steenbok clothing, both men and women, but the women's clothing is dyed with this kind of almost a maroon color to it. You know, and if you didn't know better, you might think it's commercially tanned, because there's a sort of maroonish, commercially tan color that you see. It's popular on shoes and handbags and things like that. But they actually have a root that they do it with, and they were showing us how they rub the root on that and all that. But, you know, this is a woman's traditional color. And then they adorn that dress with ostrich eggshell beads, which they make by hand in this really grueling process where they actually literally hand drill with a sharp implement on the end of a spindle these little holes so they can sew these things on. And they break the ostrich shells up, and they get these little pieces, and then they so painstakingly use these nail clippers to clip them off close to round, and then they string them all, and then they roll them until they're round. You know, it's like amazing amount of time goes into one ostrich shell button, right? They do that. They go through a lot of trouble to make that one little bead. So if you ever get a Bushman necklace or bracelet handed to you, and the thing is entirely made of these little beads that were all made by hand, you know, you're really wearing something that has a lot of energy and time into it. And the patterns of black and white have certain meanings, and, you know, they, you know, what looks sort of uniform at first, when you start asking questions, it starts to go down deep into story, you know. The men don't color their clothing, so it has sort of a buckskin color. And the women all carry the same implements when they're out in the field as the men, have very few possessions, but each of their possessions has a story. They have their hand drill kit for making fire. They've got their arrows. They got their bow. They've got a walking stick. The women have a digging stick and a carrying bag. So their regalia is kind of simple. I was up in Austria a couple of years ago, and I was working with Tyrolean people up near Innsbruck. And they pride themselves. They say, you know, here's our culture hero, and they show me on the dollar, on their bill, whatever bill it is, this picture of a man named Andreas Hofer. And they say, you know who this is? I'm like, no, this is our Geronimo. You know, so when they look over to across the ocean to North America, their favorite culture hero is Geronimo, you know, not, you know, George Washington or Abraham Lincoln. Why? Because Geronimo resisted for so long and was able to fight off the cavalry and do all these things as Andreas Hofer was able to resist the colonization and military conquest of warring nations coming in and trying to sack the people of Tyrol. You know, high country, really mountainous. So for that reason, when you're in Europe, you know, you'll find all over certain places that the culture has been somewhat kind of lost. But when you get up into the high country where it's rugged and the people are tough, more culture survives there, right? And the people of Tyrol are definitely in that category. I went there to teach peacemaking to them. And as I explained what it was all about, this woman had this most confused look on her face, and she raised her hand and she says, "Is this what it is?" And I'm like, "Yes." And, you know, through the translator, she says, "Well, this is what my grandmother taught us." And I'm like, "Well, if I came all the way over here and you paid me to tell you to listen to your grandmother, then I guess that's my job, you know, but you guys already have that." You know, everyone's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Okay." So this is an example, you know, of this. But what really struck me during that weekend, because we had to model something about the sacred fire, so I was going to teach about the sacred fire, a way of grieving loss, so that people could return to their upright mind, essentially. That was what we were talking about in the context of peacemaking. And there was a man that was a dear friend of mine who's passed on soon after this story. He wrote me an email and he said, "You know, I know that I'm not going to live long because I have this cancer and it's really pretty much, I'm losing the battle." And he said, "And I know you're going to have a sacred fire for me after I pass away. But I'm asking, can all my friends who love me have a sacred fire for me while I'm alive? And then come to me and tell me the stories that happened at the fire, you know?" And so I got that email while I was in Austria, in Tyrol, way up above Innsbruck in the mountains. And I told that to the people at this event, right? These were all local Tyroleans, men, women, children. There was a parallel children's program. There were elders, right? But they were all dressed in kind of rugged, semi-outdoor clothing, you know? Well, we were way up at this camp, you know? They didn't go home after I made this announcement. We just took a break. Half hour later, they were all back together. And every woman was dressed in a different dress with an embroidery pattern on it. And my friend Gailey from Tyrol, she says to me, "Do you see that embroidery pattern on that woman's dress? That means she comes from this valley between these two mountains. And you see how her daughters have that same embroidery pattern?" And she's pointing out to me the regalia and how that regalia in her story linked to place. Well, it got more beautiful than that, because the next thing I know, I said, "Do you guys, in the sacred fire tradition, there's men's teachings, women's teachings?" "Oh, yes, we have that." And that was it. They just sort of said, "We got it," you know. All the girls come back in with their hair braided in a particular way, this beautiful braid, and they all have baskets. And the baskets are filled with flowers that they had gathered in the meadow. And it was that time of year when the Wiesen, the high meadows of the Alps, like the Sound of Music, are so covered with beautiful wildflowers. But all the girls have gathered collections of flowers in mathematical clumps. Like, you could see it. It wasn't just a random bunch of flowers. They were organized for something that I didn't know what was about to happen. They all came to the fire, and the women started singing this beautiful song. And the girls grabbed the color flower, and they danced. And then at the song, they would drop the flower at a certain point around the fire pit. And at the end of this three-minute song, you wouldn't believe the beautiful braided flower wreath that was around the flower. And they said, "We have this too here." I was like, "Boy, you guys really have this here, you know?" But the regalia is such an important part of that story. You know, they I would never think to go to a workshop with my traditional dress in the suitcase, just in case what? The workshop presenter says, we need a sacred fire? Like, would it occur to you to do that? Like, I don't go to workshops, especially, you know, at camps, with my traditional clothing in my suitcase. That's also tied to place, right? So you can see what I mean by how, in some places, culture survives. Culture lives, you know? And, you know, people are gonna put regalia on, and they're gonna wanna tell their stories. And if you are a program or an organization or a family that wants to strengthen cultural mentoring, pay attention to regalia. And in two ways, you know, it isn't just about having the regalia. It's also about the storytelling that goes with it and what it ties to. Because regalia is clearly tying to more than one thing. You know, it isn't just tying to an activity, right? It's rooting to something, like the trackers with the Pride in Project emblazoned on their hat, because they really want to tell you about that amazing experience they had with bears from tracking them, because that somehow got into them and now it moves them, right? Pride in place, pride in lineage. You know, you think about if you're involved in the martial arts, especially the ones that use colored belts to mark rank. Rank is basically equivalent to experience and depth in a lineage. Those things are proudly displayed. The moment you walk into that space, you know who's who simply by the color of their belt. And it's not necessarily, you know, people might think it's externalized, almost like militaristic, but it isn't. For the people who wear that, they have this deep feeling about what it means to hold that. All those hours of training, all that internalizing, and it's quite literally tied to the Southeast because martial arts is about movement and memorizing certain movement patterns, right? So think about how regalia plays out. And as, you know, the thing that I've seen flourishing in the Eight Shields Network, all these programs around the world that are utilizing, you know, these deep nature connection, cultural mentoring practices, they all have logos and they all have t-shirts. And every time I go visit another program and do teachings with the, you know, the parents or the trainers, I always leave with t-shirts. You know, they're always sending me with stuff from their school. That if they know my children, they know what sizes the little ones are. My kids have them. You know, they have sassafras, you know, with the beautiful sassafras leaves. And I see my daughter, you know, she's 9 now. But she really loves her sassafras shirt because it ties to two people that she loves dearly, Auntie and Uncle Horseshoe Crab. That's how she thinks of them. the husband's name is David, and the wife's name is Saskia. Saskia is a Frisian from the Netherlands, and David is a Wampanoag man from Martha's Vineyard, or Nompi, which is the name of it in their language. And they run Sassafras Outdoor School there. And Will and Finch met Saskia and David when they came to visit us in California, and they brought in their suitcase horseshoe crab carcasses to gift to the children with stories. And so now that is riveted. Do you see the lineage happening there? Like they tie the name Auntie and Uncle Horseshoe Crab to David and Saskia, and that shirt is about love, isn't it, in that case? Because there's a bond that's going to tie in to other cultural elements. But the shirt is now a living reminder to my daughter of something that isn't just a shirt. It's for her because she takes pride. She knows that this nature connection thing is important. She knows it in her bones. She feels it. You know, she loves that she has shirts from different schools. You know, she probably used some wilderness Torah, you know, regalia. I'm sure there's some beautiful wilderness Torah regalia. Let me see it, please. Oh, man, you guys are upping the ante here. See, this is embroidery. Oh, no, it's not. No. But so this is exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about, right? It's like if you have this, you wear it with pride. I need one of these. Oh, that's mine. Okay. So this is regalia, you know? So now when I walk around, people are going to say, what's this wilderness Torah thing? Oh, that? You don't want to know about that, right? But I'm gonna tell stories, right? It's gonna immediately bring me to this night. It's gonna bring me to this moment. You know, regalia is a living memory of connection. So think about it that way, and give it life in that way also. You know, let it be so. And for all the rest of this, this is gonna be right here, and I'll wear it out when I'm done. How's that? You know, when you see the Ring One Cultural Element series, you're going to see me standing in front of this giant word, manzanita. But I'm standing right in the middle of it, so you can't tell what the word is. It looks really strange. But they're flying their regalia in the background, too, so you guys deserve that. Yeah. So H. Shields, of course, has regalia. And the regalia tells a story because, you know, Ingwe, this is, you know, again, reflecting back to Ingwe, one of he liked when he was alive, he called himself the grandfather of Wilderness Awareness School. But when we celebrated one of the anniversaries of Wilderness Awareness School, Ingwe wrote this beautiful letter to us, and he said, you know, I have hundreds of grandchildren now around the world here through Wilderness Awareness School. And I said, Ingwe, you are no longer just the grandfather of Wilderness Awareness School. You're the grandfather of a movement that has names all over the planet, you know. And I was visiting a friend of mine, and she showed me something she was really proud of, which was a quilt that she had made. And her husband, Beth and Bob Stagenborg, run a Nature Connection program in the Cincinnati, Ohio area. And she was a kindergarten teacher for most of her life, a preschool teacher, I believe, or kindergarten, I can't remember which, but when she retired, she continued to do work with children using the Nature Connection modeling, and they formed this nice program. And Bob had this beautiful quilt that she made from all of his t-shirts. And do you imagine how many totes of t-shirts and sweatshirts I have from all over the place now? But I can't part with any of them. So Beth said, give me a box of them, I'll make you a quilt. So I have this beautiful quilt now made of the regalia of all these programs that tie back to H. Shields and, you know, that Ingwe felt proud to be part of as the grandfather of a movement, so to speak, right? So I'm painting many pictures around regalia and how it works, you know, and why it's important. But Ingwe said, we have to use shields as symbols, because this will be our regalia, because people will be like, what do you mean, eight shields? And anybody here ever asked that question? Like, what do you mean, eight shields? It immediately requires a story. And he said that quite literally. He said, the Akamba were brilliant in this way. They had these shields that they carried that weren't really for battle, but they had paintings on them that were symbolic. And you would wear them in a certain way at certain times. And people would look and say, what does that one mean? And then you have to tell a story. He said, and this is how H. Shields should be. It should be festooned with the need for telling story, because that's where it flows, right? So think of regalia as an excuse for storytelling. And think of the stories that are worthy to end up on regalia as the ones that make you get in your body and remember and want to relive, right? Because that's the stuff you are really roped into, connected to in a deep way. So that's regalia. Bam! All right.